On Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we have State Senator Howard Markline here and Representative Todd Novak as well joining us in the studio. Gentlemen, it's a million-dollar rain out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's rumbling out there right now, so it sounds pretty good. It's supposed to be like this for a couple days, but we need it.
Yeah, that's some money in your area, isn't it, there
for
the farmers?
Yes. And, you know, I just hope the rain keeps coming through the summer, because remember what happened last year? We kind of had a wet start to things, and then the spigot shut off, so let's just hope this just continues. So,
yeah, indeed. Howard, you've been kind of making the rounds around your area too, haven't you?
Yeah. So, we're just starting kind of the summer cycle of events and stuff. I was in Muscadet over the weekend for their Morel Fest, and weather. I was there Saturday, and a beautiful, beautiful day, nice weather, and great turnout, and so it was good. I went to the fire department steak feed afterwards, and it was a nice crowd there for that. And and I've been to Waseca and Blue River, and been to a lot of these communities for their fish fries and steak feeds, and that's, I love to eat, so if you want to get me there, have some food. So and it's cool how especially the fire and EMS departments support each other. Because like at Muscadet, I mean, I ran into people from Lone Rock and from, just different fire and EMS units from all over. They show up to support their brethren, and which is pretty neat.
What was the mushroom report in your areas? Anybody?
I've talked to people that looked pretty good. I was looking at Facebook, and people are posting all they got. It looks like they're pretty abundant. I don't know how the Muscadet, if I haven't heard how that festival went, because that was last weekend.
Over the weekend.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that was, I'm sure it was a success, so.
Did you get there early enough to get some, Howard?
You know what, I have never, I shouldn't admit this, but I've never paid for a Morel in my life, but I've eaten a lot of them, so I basically, if we, Peggy and I go out looking for them, and we're not serious, I'm not going to, we find them. That's great. We had some good morale. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, they started kind of early this year. And they were talking about the weather earlier. I mean, last year, it was pretty dry overall. And I can't remember exactly what they were paying in Muscadet for the morels last year. I think it was like $100 a pound. And I heard from a couple of people last Saturday that this year was like $50 to $70 a pound, which is still, pretty pricey. I wouldn't pay for them. So we love to eat them. They're great, and it's kind of fun. I enjoy getting out doing that.
Yeah, you bet. You mentioned being in some areas, some steak feeds and fundraisers, and one of the overriding things I want to talk about too is the EMS and EMTs, and there's a little bit of a change in how you qualify to become one, and I think that was a big deal for a lot of people, wasn't it, Howard?
Yeah, and this started, probably half a dozen years ago or so, when I did some rural EMS summits around my district, Darlington, in Lancaster, Plain, Elroy, and we did several rounds of these. And based on the feedback that we got, and these are from rural volunteer EMS units, okay, not paid paramedic units and stuff, we drafted and passed a number of bills, and some of these took a couple of sessions till we got them done. And one of them had to do with the National Registry Exam, NREMT. And the NREMT is a test, national test, that may or may not relate to what our local EMS units do. They've showed me some of the questions on that exam. And I've talked about this before, how, what is the proper tire pressure for an ambulance in the mountains of Colorado? How do you treat a shark bite? I mean, just stuff like that. It just, you know, and it doesn't apply to anybody in Casanova. You know what I mean? So anyway, so we passed a bill last year, and it's in effect now, which would allow the local EMS units to decide whether or not they want to make this exam, national exam, mandatory for the lowest level of the EMRs. Okay, they're the lowest level on our spectrum of providers, and we've had some that have decided to make this optional, and the goal here is to get these volunteers on that first step of the ladder. Okay, these are the people that you know, once you get them in and they're running with the crew and stuff, the terminology becomes more common to them, and we were contacted a few weeks ago by this woman from Potosi who Potosi made it optional, and she's an EMR now, and she was just excited. And again, you have to pass all the coursework. I mean, this isn't preclude or circumvent all of the coursework and the tests that you have to take in order to qualify, but it just makes this national registry exam optional. So I think you're going to see more and more of that test be optional around here. And then hopefully, you know, the people that become EMRs, again, they're going to run with the crews and then get more comfortable, confident, maybe, and then when they want to advance to the EMT level, then they will likely have to take the National Registry exam. But we need to get volunteers. Staffing is probably the biggest issue that we're facing with our local rural EMS units.
And Todd, you'd hate to deter somebody that was interested. Maybe they didn't want to do it because of that, right?
Right. It's hard. You know, it's not easy to be an EMT. It's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of training. And, you know, I always heard, you know, people would start the course, and they've got family. If you got a family and a young family and, you know, and a job and stuff, it's hard to go to school and do all the training. So you want them trained, but you want to make it as you know, easy, not easy, but as accessible as you can. Howard's right. I mean, I think I've been in office 10 years, and I think this national registry has been a top thing since I've been in. And we've, you know, tried every year do some bills and Howard's taking lead on this on EMT and trying to, you know, the main thing is I'm concerned about some departments because they just aren't getting the volunteers to come up and be trained. And, you know, it's not just EMTs too. It just seems to be a thing. You got fire departments and stuff and different even civic organizations where people just aren't stepping up. It's different times, and so it's important we make things easy for everybody.
Indeed, especially in the rural areas where you don't want to have the EMTs come from a lot farther away. You know?
Right. I mean, your response time should be hopefully 5 to 10 minutes, if that. I mean, we have some municipalities in Lafayette County, Howard and I do, where the response time is 20 minutes. And that's just sometimes one municipality can't get a full crew, so they have to call the neighboring one. And that's happened a few times. And that's kind of, you know, in a life and death situation, that's a scary thing to do.
Indeed. We also wanted to talk about RN staffing, Howard. And there have been some federal rules coming down the pike about that I think you were a little concerned about.
Yeah. So last week, I was invited to spend some time with Boscoville Care and Rehab, and which I appreciate. It was a great opportunity. And last week was the National Skilled Nursing Week, you know, so they had invited me over and had a chance to meet with a number of their staff, which was great, and a number of the residents at Boscoville Care and Rehab. And again, going back to food, they served at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they served ice cream. So I was all in, of course, for that, you know. So, but it was a good meeting. But one of the reasons they asked me to be there is just to share their concern with these federal rules that are proposed to go into effect. And, you know, and the more I look at these, the more concerned, I think I am, and we should all be, especially in our rural nursing homes. So, and these are the rules that, this is at the federal level, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, and would require various standards for how many RNs you have to have on staff 24/7, CNAs, et cetera. And the concern here is like our rural, one of the rules in here would require that a registered nurse, an RN, be on site 24/7, every day, every hour of the year. And we've got a number of nursing homes that where there's an LPN maybe on site, you know, during the night, or an RN is on call within minutes away from, you know, a local nursing home. And Boscobel Care and Rehab and a number of our nursing homes are really concerned about this. For example, this 24/7 requirement for registered nurses, the study that we got, independent study we got, said that 76% of the Wisconsin hospitals do not meet this requirement currently, okay? And they'd have three years here to adopt this. The question is, where are we going to get these nurses, these RNs? I mean, it isn't like we've got all kinds of unemployed nurses, RNs, sitting around Richland County and Grant County, and I, you know, all the counties around here, you know, in rural areas. So they just don't think they're going to be able to staff it, you know. And does it, you know, when you step back and look at it from a care standpoint, does it make sense? Do you have to have an RN sitting there at 1 a.m, 2 a.m, when rarely there's a situation that needs the assistance of an RN, as opposed to having that RN on call and require them to be within a few minute response time. So anyway, but I wanted to mention this because, again, our rural areas are the ones that are going to be affected the most. And one of the people that works with the state Nursing Home Group Association told me, his quote was, Schmidt Woodland Hills, he said, it's got 50 beds, will have the same requirements and standards as a 500-bed facility in New York City, okay? And again, when I read this requirement and these rules, proposed rules, this sounds to me like this is written by urban people, urban bureaucrats wrote this, not somebody from the rural part of our country. So hopefully, you know, this doesn't go into effect here for a few years, and hopefully they're going to hear a lot of feedback from a number of our rural nursing homes out here, because the reality is I don't know how they're going to be able to meet these staffing requirements.
Right. So it's a federal rule, Todd, but could the state not go along with it, or how does that work?
I don't know. We'd have to dig into it and see. I don't think you can just say you're not going to do it. I think that what the federal government's trying to do is go away from nursing homes, period. I think you've seen that over the years, is because we've lost a lot of nursing homes in the state of Wisconsin, and they're making it harder and harder for nursing homes to operate on other things. They just want everybody out of the nursing home. They don't want nursing homes anymore. They want you staying in your home with home health. They want you in an assisted living. They want you in, you know, an elder apartment. So I think the trend is that nursing homes will be a thing of the past. It's what I, you know, if I had to look forward and from looking back to now, I mean, just to, so.
There are some waivers, some limited waivers, they said, in this rule for hardship cases. Well, when 85% of the hospitals in our state don't meet these requirements for RNs and stuff, I don't, you know, are you going to give hardship waivers for all but 15% of your hospitals? I mean, that's, you know, it's my understanding waivers are supposed to be kind of the exception, not the norm. So anyway, I just, like I said, I think something's got to be done here at the federal level. And at a minimum, we need to create an awareness of what's going on because, you know, as Todd said, you know, these nursing homes provide a service to a lot of our residents, a lot of our citizens. You know, I don't think any of us are looking forward to the day when we can be in a nursing home, but we may have surgery and be discharged from a local hospital, at, you know, and need rehabilitation services. That's where we go, you know, and stuff. So we need those long-term care and rehab facilities, especially in our rural communities.
Yeah, most definitely. You've been in the news a lot lately, Howard, as co-chair of the Joint Finance. You've been quoted a few times. The disagreement over PFAS, you know, that kind of continues to make the news. Any update there?
Yeah, and it's incredibly frustrating. You know, like on PFAS, for example, a year ago, we were in the middle of the budget development, and the governor had proposed about $100 million for PFAS. And PFAS is it's a big issue. And I don't think it's really hit this area as bad as I've heard some stories around the state that are just, they're terrible. But we understand it's a big issue. The legislature put in $125 million, recognizing that this is pretty significant. And we set it aside in a trust fund, a PFAS trust fund. And then a bill was passed. And in this bill, there was a lot of conversation between the DNR and the bill authors on the bill, which basically would specify where the money goes and would also provide some limited protections for innocent property owners. Okay, about the best example I can give you is farmers, that where the DNR has issued a permit to have sludge from a municipality spread on a farmer's field. Okay, and guess what's in the sludge? PFAS. And so this farmer, and this has happened a lot up in northeastern Wisconsin. You know, the farmers, they've spread sludge on his field, and all of a sudden now this farmer's got PFAS on his land, and then try to get a loan, try to sell your farm with this forever chemical on there. So the bill, the Senate Bill 312, would have provided some protection for innocent landowners. Or even another example that was given where was a subdivision that used to be a farm. And, you know, they spread, again, sludge on it from the municipality. That subdivision is now built, and now your home is on top of a site that's got PFAS in it. So we need to have some protections for innocent property owners, and, you know, especially farmers that had this stuff spread on their land. And the farmers, they had no idea what PFAS even stood for or what it was. So I think that made a lot of sense. And I think the governor wants to have the DNR have the ability to basically sue, you know, whoever they want. And they say, well, we're not going to sue those people. Well, I don't always trust, you know, the government. I don't always trust the DNR. You know, they can, you know, if they want to sue you, they can sue you. And I think that's a horrible position to be in. So that's the debate, you know. And so we passed Senate Bill 312 and went through the Assembly. Senate went to the governor's desk. Before the governor took action on the bill, Mark Bourne, who's the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee with me on the Assembly side, is Representative Bourne. And we said to the governor, please do not veto this bill. You veto this bill, you are essentially slamming the door on our ability to get this money out to communities that need it, and homeowners and stuff that need it and stuff. And anyway, and obviously the governor vetoed the bill, which is unfortunate. So I don't know. I don't think there's any pathway for us to release the bill, because, you know, we pass a bill, the legislature passes a bill, it goes to the governor, he vetoes it. What is the standard for the override of a veto? It isn't a committee. One committee, the Joint Finance Committee, can't override a veto. It takes 2/3 vote of the legislature. So I don't see how we're going to, which is unfortunate. It's tragic that we're not going to be able to get this money out the door.
Mm-hmm. I know in a municipality like you, you're the mayor of Dodgeville. You're not anymore?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. But having run the city, certainly that's a concern as far as, you know. Where
we were ahead of the game. We had all the wells tested to make sure, and PFAS came back non-traceable. That's a new thing, which you're going to have in a lot of municipalities. You know, it's not expensive. It's not cheap to get wells tested. I think Dodgeville's got 8 wells. And we wanted to be ahead of the curve to make sure. But some municipalities can't afford to even test their wells. So there needs to be some programs and some money for that. And in the scheme of PFAS, because there's still so much unknown, the money that we're talking about here really isn't that much. This is going to cost a lot of money over the years. So this money that the governor vetoed is just a drop in the bucket. It was just going to start the process rolling. So it is unfortunate. You know, who would want to buy? Who's going to sell their land if there's PFAS that aren't their fault on there? And who's going to buy it? I mean, it's just, and that's the only thing that's holding the bill up, and why he vetoed it. And I just don't trust. We need to have things in black and white, because you can't tell me the DNR. There's too many horror stories out there already about the DNR suing over different things. So.
Todd Novak and Howard Markline of the Morning Show will have more coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to the Morning Show on WRCO Radio. I'm Phil Nee, and we are joined by Representative Todd Novak and State Senator Howard Markline joining us here on the Morning Show today. And moving on with some other notes, there were some other bills that that wound up being vetoed. Some other things he wanted to talk about, Howard, in terms of recent news, teacher apprenticeships and some of those things.
Yeah. So on the teacher apprenticeship, that was a bill that, again, I thought would have had strong, it did have strong support in the legislature, but basically would permit our colleges of education to have teachers get paid to get into the classroom. And the idea was to get potential future teachers into the classroom before their final semester of college. Because what happens, unfortunately, and I've heard this more than once, is somebody wants to be a elementary education teacher or a high school teacher. And, you know, they go through 3.5 years or more of college, and then they do their student teaching, where they're in front of a classroom for the first time. And all of a sudden, it's like, listen, this isn't what I signed up for. I mean, I enjoy history, and all that, but geez, you know, the classroom management part of it and stuff is a challenge. And that's where, you know, I mean, good teachers know how to manage that classroom, you know, some of those issues. So this was money that was set aside for that purpose. And unfortunately it got vetoed, and which was unfortunate. So then the other bill, I think that was I was very disappointed in, that was the Chippewa Valley, Eau Claire Valley hospitals up there. Again, we had an unexpected closing of the hospitals up there, and you know, it's a big hit to the community. And so we had passed legislation again, allocating $15 million for the emergency departments. From what we heard from the hospitals up there, and I've met with the hospitals, it sounds like the emergency departments are the area where they needed the most help. That's where they had the big spike in the volume of people getting into the hospitals. So we allocated $15 million for that, and it was going to be for Eau Claire and for Chippewa Valley. And the governor partially vetoed that and expanded the use of that money to 18 counties in northwest Wisconsin. And that certainly wasn't our intention. You know, we wanted it focused in one area, and then basically kind of opened it up to be able to use it for whatever purpose. So Anyway, and I was disappointed. Again, we got money that we had set aside. That was something that we passed near the end of the session. It was, and Todd and I serve a long ways away from the Eau Claire and Chippewa area, but, it's a very unfortunate situation, and we're sensitive to the issue, and we passed that bill, which I think made a whole lot of sense, but... Anyway, unfortunately, the governor vetoed that, and so that money is probably not going to get distributed.
Concerning, certainly for our areas, because it could happen elsewhere, Todd.
That is true, and I think we're very fortunate that we have some pretty good hospitals in Southwest Wisconsin, and there's some other hospitals, I believe, that are on the radar. I think Marshfield is cutting back and doing some stuff, too. So it's a little concerning to see this happen, and hopefully there isn't a ripple effect across the state. But, I mean, you had this one hospital. This was, I don't know, $15 million? And divided by 18 counties, or for cover 18 counties, that isn't very much money. $15 million, I know it sounds like a lot, but it isn't in the scheme of things to start with. And then to water it down even more really doesn't help much. So.
Yeah, and again, it's just disappointing because, again, we want, whether it's PFAS, whether it's the hospitals, yeah, we voted for that, get the money out of here, to get that money to where we had intended it to go. And again, unfortunately, the governor vetoed it. And I don't know that there's a pathway to getting that, whether it's PFAS or getting to those that money to those hospitals. It's frustrating.
What was the reasoning, you think, that he vetoed the hospital?
Well, I think he wanted to give as much flexibility to the Department of Health Services as possible, to make it much, much broader, that basically any hospital in that whole region could qualify, and it could be used for anything, any kind of a service, which is... That's okay, but that doesn't really address the kind of the local issue up there, which... It looks like it's the emergency departments is where the most pressure has been placed on with the closing of that hospital.
Terrible for their community, though, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. We talked about nurses a little bit ago. I'm sure a lot of the staff is going to find jobs. I mean, there's in healthcare, there's big demand for nurses, all kinds of healthcare professionals, but it's disruptive. Can you imagine your local hospital? And there wasn't a long lead time in terms of the closing the hospital up there. It was done very quickly.
Pretty quickly. Also in the news recently, the campus, Platteville turning the keys over to the county here coming up. And a lot of people discussing the fact that, the $2 million allocated, but maybe we need some more. What have you heard about that? What are your thoughts on that, Howard?
Yeah. And another thing that I've heard from locally here is from the local community theater group that has material at the campus. And there's concern that they're not going to be able to get their material out, whether it's, I think it's stage settings and maybe some costumes and that kind of thing. Stuff that the university does not own, and they want to be able to access that. So... Anyway, we contacted UW System and we said, hey, listen, it's not your property. The system apparently sent a letter to the county saying that we want everything, we're going to take everything out of there on May 16th or something, mid-May kind of date. And the local group was just concerned that they're going to take their property. Well, we talked to System. They said, come on, guys, let's be reasonable. Let them get in there and take their whatever property props and that sort of thing that they have there. So hopefully, that's been accomplished. And if not, if they can't work that out, that's pretty sad. You know what I mean? It's not owned by the county and it's not owned by the university. So hopefully that'll get resolved. So I haven't seen, the system or I don't know that there's been any request made yet from the county, to WEDC in terms of you know, the application for the money is going to have to come from the county.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment, we'll have a look at today's news.
Credit. Get pre-qualified so you know exactly what you can afford and get matched to money saving first-time homebuyer programs. Quit paying rent, become a homeowner, and save money? Now that's a win-win-win. Experience the difference at Community First Bank.
Community First Bank is first for you. CFBank.com/homeloans. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Loan subject to credit approval. Restrictions may apply.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland City.
Good morning. WRCO News at 6:30 is sponsored by Court and Main Furniture and Mattress, helping you create the home you can't wait to come home to. Muggy and turning breezy as the day goes on. Some thunderstorms at times today, some of which could be rather severe, especially later today, a high of 82. Some severe storms possible tonight, ending by late evening and a low of 54. Right now, so far, 1/10 of an inch of rain. It's raining hard and 62 degrees.
Court and Main and A-Plus Furniture are now offering warranty on your furniture. If you have kids, pets, spills, stains, or damage, no problem. UltraCare will help protect your new furniture investment. We have multiple levels that can cover a single item or a full room of furniture. If you have food or drink stains, massage units and components, tear or rip, and more, don't worry, it's covered. Protect your investment. Stop in for more details at Court and Main and A-Plus Furniture and Mattress in downtown Richland Center.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee, and here is what you need to know. Weather, the top story in Wisconsin today, as an increased risk of severe storms will be happening as the day goes on. From Richland County Emergency Management, they speak of severe storms with a damaging wind, hail, or tornado threat through the day today. Some morning storms, it could be strong to severe, but the highest risk of severe weather will be between 3 and 9 p.m. today. And the impacts could also include damage from hail to property, and winds could lead to tree damage, downed power lines, localized flooding possible with rises on some rivers and streams. So stay weather aware and have a plan and be prepared to take shelter immediately if warnings are issued later today. New vaccination requirements for kids in Wisconsin schools and child care centers. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services announces updates that include a requirement for meningitis vaccination and that chickenpox infection must be documented by a qualified medical professional. There is no change to existing exemption options for medical, religious, or philosophical reasons. These changes align with longstanding childhood vaccine recommendations made by a CDC advisory committee. The new requirements were initially implemented in February, but paused in early March when some were suspended by the legislature's Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules. That suspension expired at the end of the legislative session on April 15th, making the requirements now fully in effect. Kicking off Tourism Week in Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers joined Department of Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers Monday at Rooted in Red Cranberry Farm in Wood County. Evers says it's an example of two of the state's biggest industries working together. Sayers says the ag tourism industry is another way that Wisconsin can tell its story. In addition to the farm located near Wisconsin Rapids, Evers and Sayers yesterday also visited a pair of businesses in Bayfield on Monday. The leading Democrat in the Wisconsin Assembly says she thinks her party can take the majority this year. That would mean winning 52 seats this year.
It is a big lift for us to flip 15 seats in 1 year. No question. Do I think we're building the infrastructure to do it and have the candidates to do it? I do. I think it's entirely possible.
Representative Greta Neubauer told a WisPolitics luncheon last week the lawmakers will have to be more responsive to voters under new maps, no matter who wins in November. A motorcyclist was injured in a crash Friday night after eluding sheriff's deputies. The Richland County Sheriff's Department reports attempting to stop Benjamin Peterson, 29, of Mazamani, around 7:20 on State Highway 60. Peterson began to flee the deputy while heading eastbound at a high rate of speed. Deputies decided to terminate the pursuit in the interest of public safety near Schmidt Lane after Peterson passed a car in a no-passing zone towards oncoming traffic. After deputies deactivated their emergency lights and siren, they checked the area and were unable to locate Benjamin Peterson or his motorcycle. A short time later, Richland County Dispatch received a 911 call about a possible motorcycle crash on State Highway 60 near County Highway TB. Deputies arrived on scene and provided medical care with the assistance of bystanders until EMS arrived. Lone Rock EMS began medical care and transported Benjamin Peterson to Gotham, where UW MedFlight was waiting. Peterson's motorcycle was not visible from the road and was later found several hundred feet in the woods. During contact with law enforcement, Benjamin Peterson was showing signs of impairment, charges of fleeing and eluding law enforcement, felony bail jumping, OWI, and second-degree recklessly endangering safety are pending. The Richland County Sheriff's Department was assisted on scene by the Lone Rock Fire, Muscadet Fire, UW MedFlight, and Richland Center Police Department. The UW Police Department assisted with the OWI investigation. One person is dead after a UTV crash in Crawford County this past weekend. The sheriff's office said a 79-year-old woman from Ferryville was killed when the UTV she was driving was hit by a vehicle. Investigators said the woman was crossing Highway 171 when she drove in front of a vehicle, causing the crash. Yesterday, construction began on part of 82 in Vernon County. The Wisconsin DOT says Highway 82 between Highway 35 and Highway 27 will be resurfaced. This week, crews will be marking intersections and detours. And beginning next Tuesday, Highway 82 will be closed until mid-September. The DOT says that the posted detours will use Highway 56 and Highway 14. The project will then wrap up in early October. In 2023, Talena Sprecher became the first Ithaca FFA member since 1967 to earn her Wisconsin State FFA degree. This year, three more Ithaca members followed her lead and submitted their applications for state FFA degree. Josie Lau, Violet Dilley, and Logan Anderson will all walk across the stage at the 95th Wisconsin FFA Convention and receive their state degrees. To receive a degree, a member must complete at least 360 hours of agriculture education, have at least 24 months of FFA membership at the time of application, have received the Green Hand and Chapter FFA degrees, having earned in productivity and invested $1,500 or worked 1,000 hours in a supervised agricultural experience, taken part in at least five different FFA activities, also participated in the planning and completion of the chapter program of activities. Also, they may have participated in at least 25 additional unduplicated hours of community service activities within at least two different community service activities. The Ithaca FFA chapter is the oldest FFA chapter in the state. It is 66 members strong and includes a middle school and high school chapter. The organization is led by advisor Melissa Sprecher. Gas prices have risen 7.4 cents over the last week. The average across Wisconsin is $3.37 per gallon this week. That is 2.3 cents lower than a month ago and over 10 cents lower than this time last year. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, predicts good news with the summer travel forecast. The prices over the next few months will stay far under record levels and should continue trending lower as we get closer to the 4th, but head toward a holiday weekend this weekend with lots of travel plans.
The home loan experts are at Community First Bank. Get great advice on how to improve your credit. Get pre-qualified so you know exactly what you can afford. And get match-to-money saving first-time homebuyer programs. Quit paying rent, become a homeowner, and save money? Now that's a win-win-win. Experience the difference at Community First Bank.
Community First Bank is first for you. CFBank.com/homeloans. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Loan subject to credit approval. Restrictions may apply.
Muggy and turning breezy as the day goes on. Occasional showers and thunderstorms. So the rain we're experiencing now won't be the last. Some storms could be rather severe, especially late today. A high of 82. Some severe storms possible tonight and a low of 54. Tomorrow sounds better. Partly sunny and a high of 72. Right now in Richland Center with some thunder and lightning and light rain, we're at 62 degrees. That followed yesterday's 1 inch and 8/100ths recorded here at the studios and a high of 73.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
Sports Time is sponsored by Simon's Recreation Complex, Richland Center's public indoor swimming pool and fitness center, and by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Local sports, a recap, set the stage four, and we'll look back at a Brewer loss last night after a tough injury to the Brewers' starting pitcher. The bullpen had to pitch in.
All Cub Cadet mowers are on sale now at the Homesteader Store. Hi, this is Rick. The sale includes industry-leading Cub Cadet Ultima zero-turn mowers with both lap bar and steering wheel units. The sale includes the quality Enduro Series lawn and garden tractors. They are all on sale, so come and save $150 to $500. See the full line of Cub Cadet products at your mower headquarters, the Homesteader Store, Highway 14 East, or at homesteaderstore.com.
There were a lot of high school events that were postponed yesterday, including a lot of baseball and softball games. One WIA regional game was played yesterday in softball, Cuba City 12-2 over Argyle Blackhawk. And in baseball, Baraboo shut out Mauston 13-0. They did push through and soldier on with track and field events yesterday because the sectionals are coming up on Thursday, and today's forecast is not looking all that good for any outdoor activity. So they did get them in at Prairie du Chien in Division II. Lodi was the top team. Dodgeville Mineral Point, the second place scoring team. And also, it was Lodi number one, Platteville number two in the boys' division. Richland Center's boys' team finished fifth as a team. We'll look at some of the individuals more in depth coming up during our 8-10 report today as we compile all of our track figures. And yesterday at River Ridge, it was Fenimore taking the number one spot, followed by Boscobel and Kickapoo Lafarge. Riverdale took the fourth place spot, and Ithaca Weston was sixth among the 11 teams entered. Fenimore boys were number one, Kickapoo Lafarge second, River Ridge third, North Crawford fourth, and Iowa Grant fifth. Boscobel was seventh and Riverdale eighth. Ithaca Weston was 11th as far as boys team totals yesterday. The top four individuals move on to the next level on Thursday at the track sectionals. On today's high school sports schedule, Richland Center will host Dodgeville Mineral Point in area girls soccer. Also, the Richland Center baseball game scheduled for yesterday was rescheduled for today against Adams Friendship. And plenty of WIA softball games that will be a little bit on the brink of being canceled today, I would assume. Lafarge at Ithaca is set to start at 4 o'clock this afternoon in WIAA softball. Kickapoo at Brookwood and DeSoto at Hillsboro as well, and Highland hosting Potosi Cassville. Boscobel and Riverdale slated to meet at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Mineral Point hosting Wisconsin Heights and Iowa Grant at Fenimore. And also later today, River Valley is slated to host Viroqua Youth Initiative, Lancaster at Westfield, and Adams Friendship at Dodgeville tonight at 6, and Westby plays at Prairie du Chien. The Brewers' bullpen surrendered a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the ninth, then lost the game in the 10th. Monday's 3-2 loss was the third in the last four games for Milwaukee. Milwaukee, that is. Andrew Monasterio hit his first home run of the season, and Christian Yelich stole home for the other run. The Brewers clung to a game-and-a-half lead over the Cubs after the game. As far as the game was concerned, starter Joe Ross went out with an injury after the first inning. Manager Pat Murphy talked
about it. It affects you a lot when your starter goes one. He had a lower back strain. He was feeling it a little bit before the game, so we knew about it. But then after he had to go run and back up third, it pulled on him again. So he got through the first inning, came out after the first inning, said he wasn't feeling great. He said, I can go back out if you want me to, but I'm not feeling great. I'm not sure I can extend, so we thought it was in the best interest to get him out of there.
The Brewers wound up using seven pitchers in last night's game. Elsewhere, the Dodgers 6-4 over Arizona, Atlanta 3-0 over San Diego. San Diego won the earlier game 6-5 over Atlanta. It was St. Louis beating Baltimore 6-3, Cleveland 3-1 over the Mets, Washington 12, Minnesota 3, Toronto 9-3 over the White Sox, Boston 5 and Tampa Bay nothing, Seattle 5-4 over the Yankees, Kansas City 8-3 winners against Detroit. The Packers' 2024 schedule isn't a soft one. An analysis by Packers Wire finds the 17 games include seven against playoff teams. Of course, Green Bay has also been a playoff team, and they were last season. Things get tough in weeks 12, 13, and 14 when Coach Matt LaFleur's still young squad faces the 49ers, Dolphins, and Lions. The Packers met six teams last season that had made the playoffs the year before, finishing 3-3. That's an update on sports. This morning, I'm Phil Nee.
Which group do you belong to? The 20% or the 80%? 20% of people exercise regularly, and 80% don't. Hi, this is Tracy. Letting you know, whichever group you belong to, Simon's Recreation Complex has an activity that can get you moving. We aim to make exercise fun.
And I don't know if that's where that's at. I guess I haven't heard locally if they have submitted that yet to WEDC or not.
Other communities are going through the same thing, though. You know, it's kind of the, you know, maybe $2 million isn't enough, right?
Yeah. You know, and that was the amount, you know, $2 million per campus is what we put in the bill. And there's like $20 million total statewide. So, and, you know, it's going to vary a lot, I think, depending on your where you're at. I think if you're in a more urban area, you know, you're going to have probably more options for redevelopment, repurposing of the campus than we will here, you know. So, you know, $2 million might be plenty in Waukesha or West Bend or, you know, but here, you know, yeah, maybe not.
You've been around the Platteville campus as well recently for some things.
Yeah, so. I was down there for lunch with the Chancellor, Tammy, and then last week or 2 weeks ago, we were together at Schultzburg School District for a presentation by one of the high school classes. And I'm really actually, I know some people probably don't like her, especially up here, but she's really connected and really working hard to keep things going. And, you know, what's going on with our colleges is what hit our school districts over the past few years is declining enrollment. And so now, you know, they're trying to adjust to that. But she's trying to do a good job. And I know Sauk County stepped up and they're going to subsidize or put money into their campus to try to keep it. I think it's like $3 million a year or something like to that to the Baraboo campus. So, yeah, it's something to keep a watch on. And as you see, it's happening all across the state to these two-year colleges. So it's the decline in enrollment is just really starting to hit and take hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've probably seen that, especially you have a lot of small high schools around your area.
Yeah, I got 14 or 15. And Howard and I have got some school districts that are 200 kids maybe and some that are 2,000. And you know, I look at, I'll go back to Lafayette, a county of 15,000 people. They have seven school districts down there and three are with 5 miles apart with about 200 kids or less each. But, you know, if the communities want to keep their schools, that should be their choice. I know Minnesota went through a phase where they forced consolidation and stuff, and I don't ever think the state needs to go that route. I think the school districts need to make that decision themselves, but it's not going to get any better. And some of these schools, I'm not sure how they're going to do in the future. I know even in my old alma mater, Iowa Grant and Highland over in that area is struggling a little bit with enrollment. It's all enrollment driven. And even Dodgeville, there's lost 140 students in the last 4 years, 140, 150. So it's your bigger schools too. I think River Valley has really had declining enrollment. So it's going down pretty quick.
Indeed. Tough to attract staff and that kind of thing when you're, you know, you got a lot of other bills to pay and you're a small district and, you know, things like that, Howard.
Yeah, well, it sure is. I mean, you know, And Todd nailed it. I think declining enrollment is your enrollment basically sets the threshold for what your budget is. Okay, and you know if you lose 4 students in Iowa Grant or Riverdale or Richland, you know, let's say your cost per pupil is $12,000-$13,000 somewhere in there. So where do you cut $50,000? I don't know. Your busing is the same. Your heat light's the same. You can't cut staff, you know, because, you know, and these 4 are not, you may have an increase in your 5th grade, and you know what I mean, and stuff. So it's tragic. And we need to take a look at that, and I don't know. And right now that enrollment decline is smoothed out over a 3-year period of time. But, you know, it's and I you know, the issue is it's a K-12 issue. And it's and we know how many first graders there are, second graders. I mean, you can see this coming, you know, 10 years down the road and stuff. And it's not looking good because, you know, we're graduating 100 and our first grade is 74, or you know what I mean? So we can see that it isn't like this is a short-term problem and it's going to fix itself at all. So and then of course, you know, that all rolls into the K-12 system, or UW system, you know. So and you know, it's a numbers game there as well.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I think I've talked to a lot of superintendents. What's killing them this year or the last couple of years is inflation more than anything. I mean, their health insurance costs, like anything, went up 10 to 14%. And then, you know, the cost of fuel and busing and stuff. So that's really ate into their bottom line is inflation too. So it's just kind of like this perfect storm of declining enrollment, inflation. We did increase school aid this last budget, even though a lot of people say it's the state's fault, but it's just this perfect storm that we're in right now. So
has there ever been any talk to go away from it being enrollment based though?
I think a lot of people have looked at the school formula. I mean, it's outdated and stuff. It needs to be, and it's been tweaked. I mean, there's different things I suppose we could do. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been really a sit down and tear it apart and put it back together kind of thing since I've been there. Howard would know more about that than his position at JFC than I am. But, you know, there's ways you can get more money to school, special education and things like that. But, you know, I think, I hate to say this, but part of our school system is, you know, Milwaukee based. You know, whatever we give, Milwaukee gets the vast majority of it. I mean, they just passed a $288 million referendum barely in Milwaukee, and that still wasn't enough, and they're going to lay teachers off over there. So that tells you something. I don't know. Howard may know more about school formula, but if it's ever been looked at rewriting or tweaking, or I don't know.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, the issue always is in any conversation we have on funding, I don't care what the topic is, but it's who's going to be winners and who's going to be losers. And of course, the Veronas of the world growing. DeForest, Swanakees, Middleton, there's no problem. I mean, this, you know.
Sun Prairie is now.
Sun Prairie, sure. High school, you know. I mean, and that's, you know, there's, you know, we're out here in a, you know, declining enrollment environment, and it's, it's tough, you know. And I've shared with my district administrators. I mean, I don't know where the heck you cut. So, going back to your question regarding should it be enrollment based, you know that can certainly be challenged. So, should a school district of 1,000 students get the same amount of money that a school district of 200 students? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, it's got to, you know, it's, you can take, throw out enrollment, but then, I mean, is that equitable? That, you know, I mean, because we have different sizes of districts all over. There's got to be some correlation, I would think, you know, of enrollment. Otherwise, you know, we've got districts, I 2,600, you know, in a district down to a couple hundred, you know, and the school district with 2,600 needs probably a little bit more money than somebody with 200, you know, in total, you know.
Unless you went by like Division One schools, certain amount, Division Two, you know, enrollment wise.
There's also this thing called the Constitution that's flared up before called the Uniformity Clause. You know, when you talk about making tweaks, because I've always thought about ideas to pump more money into rural schools and stuff like that, but then you always run into the Uniformity Clause and state constitution and litigious society we're in right now. Somebody's going to sue no matter what we do. So, and that's just the new norm. So,
you are running again, Todd?
I am running again. Unfortunately, I'm losing Richland County, the piece I have, the little corner. My district changed. So, I have all Iowa County, all Lafayette County and the northern part of Grant, Blue River, Muscadet, that kind of area, go up to Finnamore and then into Dane, Mount Horeb, and Blue Mounds. So that is my new district. So I've been kind of out and about just trying to meet my new constituents. I'm fortunate most of my district is part of my old district. So like probably 65% of it, 70 is my old district, which they all know me. And also the new part of my district, like the eastern part of Iowa County and the northern part of Grant, they know me too. My years at the newspaper, I'm known in Iowa County. And then I finally have the full Iowa Grant school system now, because I took all that. Travis Tranel had part of it, and I had part of it. Now I have all of it. So I'm pretty well known in a lot of that area. So I've been spending some time in Dane County trying to get to know the people, Mount Horeb and Blue Mound. So it's been interesting. So
it's a change for you, but you're trying to spin it into a positive, it sounds like.
You gotta put it into a spot. I'll be probably one of the top targeted seats this year, but I kind of usually am. And so people will be hearing and seeing a lot of me all over, I'm sure, probably somewhere on this radio station and ads and stuff. And I know you guys love election years. I know your listeners might not, but it's... It's going to be interesting.
And you don't know who your Democratic challenger will be?
Yeah, I have an opponent from Mount Horeb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's not a primary for your running.
No, game. Nobody's running against me. Nobody's running against her. So don't know much about her. I just know she's from Mount Horeb. So.
Okay. And Howard, you're not up for election this year.
I'm not. Nope. I'm not. But, you know, I've, similar to Todd, you know, I've got some new area in my district. I pick up, I lose Richland County, Sauk County, and pick up Crawford County. So I've been spending some time in Perdicheen, Seneca, Waseca, you know, that area, and then part of Dane County as well. So I'll be in Belleville tomorrow. I've been in that area a fair amount, just, you know, getting to meet people and stuff. So, but I did want to take a minute to thank. I think we talked about this last time I was here, about the County Road T bridge over the Wisconsin River at Blue River. And what was going to happen there, they're going to replace the bridge, which needs to be replaced. But they were going to close that bridge while the construction project went on. and which would have affected a lot of people. The Riverdale School District, part of it's on the north side of the river, would have affected fire and EMS, would affect people that live on one side of the river, work on the other, and all that. So we reached out to DOT, and I really encouraged the local fire department, EMS. I talked to the Riverdale District Administrator, you know, to contact the DOT and all that. And anyway, fortunately, a few weeks ago, we got word that the what they're going to do is they're going to build a bridge parallel to existing County T. So County T will remain open and during the construction project. Now, it will require them to, they say, move the project back a couple of years, but everybody's happy with that. If you got to wait 2 years for a new bridge, so be it. We'd rather have it done later, but keep the bridge open. And so, and again, just thanks to everybody that weighed in and got, it paid off. And so, and then on another bridge related project, I heard on Saturday that the Lone Rock Bridge, I think the ribbon cutting will be in mid-August. And so I think that's actually ahead of schedule. And that's, you know, from all I've heard from everybody on that project, we used the design build concept for that, and was really, it really worked well. It was a perfect